Hello and welcome to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Oswald, and I hope you join me on my quest for knowledge to become a better public land hunter, angler, and forager. Stick with this and who knows, maybe we will learn something together.
All right, so I'm sitting here and I'm talking to Scott Cronin. And Scott, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself for all the people who haven't listened before and heard you talk?
Yeah, I appreciate it, my friend. I'm Scott Cronin. I live in Western Kentucky. I teach high school agriculture every day with the emphasis on forestry and wildlife management. And right now we're in the prime of turkey season and looking at some issues that are going on with some concerns with our turkey flock and trying to work and advocate at a national level to see what we can put together so we can have an effort and a collaboration of folks to get some answers on these turkeys and then finish through with another good spring and hopefully get some folks out there and have some good hunts and even more importantly, get some new turkey hunters on board so we can have some younger people and new people to pass the sport and the tradition off onto.
Heck yeah. That's it's always a good thing to try and pass it on and keep it going for generations and conserve certain things. And speaking of that, before we get into that, conserving things, let's talk some fun stuff. You recently had a pretty good opener, and even better than that, you got to share it with the next generation. You want to kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we've been pretty engaged, I guess you could say, since March with getting hunters out in the field, young people and veterans and just adults that are trying their luck and wanting to learn the skill of a spring turkey hunting. And fortunately, I was able to get out for the Kentucky opener this past Saturday with my daughter to enjoy a sunrise and find a few turkeys in a landscape that is definitely changing with the amount of birds that we have. We had to work a little bit for it, but she was able to get out. She's killed a few turkeys and some deer, but she's had the gun in her hand now for a couple years and has learned the techniques of hunting turkeys and decoying turkeys and calling turkeys. But she was able to get out with me this past Saturday and get her first hunt of spring under her belt, and she got to sit next to Dad, actually tucked up in me, and kill her first longbeard in the timber from the ground. So no blind, no decoy set up, just good old fashioned turkey hunting, and she was able to kill a really nice gobbler. And fortunately, I was able to kill one myself on a separate hunt, which should have been where she harvested her first bird of the spring. But as most young people do sometimes, they panic a little and struggle a little bit with getting the firearm under control and getting it on the target secured. And she just let me know that she couldn't get settled on the shot. So I was able to actually harvest that turkey, and we found her a bird to harvest about 2.5 hours later. So it was great. So we'll have some great meals out of that and a lifetime full of memories.
That's great. I can't wait until my kids are old enough and hopefully actually want to go out and do those things. But I gotta ask you, what was some of the things that you taught your daughter as far as setups and stuff like that, you think really benefited or helped out? I mean, was it something that you gave her the opportunity to kind of pick and choose, what tree?
Anytime that anybody hunts with youth, whether it's their own child or someone else's, we've got to pump the brakes a little bit, and we've got lots of things to consider. The first and foremost thing that we all have to consider is what will make that hunt memorable and enjoyable for that young person. We can't go into it with what's going to make that hunt enjoyable and a success for us as an adult. So we have to look at all the details. We have to look at the amount of task and chore that is for us to undertake the responsibility to take a young person out into the field. And we have to work with them, whether that's ethical shots, shot placement. We have to make sure that we're working with a young person as far as recoil and making sure that they're able to work the equipment safely and handle the equipment safely. And that's going to be time spent on the range. You're going to spend time with them studying the species, hopefully, in the environment, what they're going to be in. And, you know, with my daughter, no different. We were going through a typical turkey hunt and what most people would consider early spring, and the birds that she was on later up in the morning, they were just flat hand up. And we took it upon ourselves to be patient and not push the birds. And she's advanced. She just turned 11 actually yesterday, and she's been out and she's been with me, and she's been exposed probably a little bit more than the average kid to the outdoors, and especially turkey hunting. But she started seeing what was going on, and birds weren't responding to decoys real well, and they weren't responding to calls real well at the distance that we were. And we were only, 150 to 180 yards away. And she realized that, we needed to get closer. And she said, "Dad, we've got to get closer to them if we're going to get one." And she didn't necessarily say that bubble, which is so important, to get in with a turkey, especially these Easterns in the timber. But we would catch bits and pieces of the birds moving and interacting with the hens and the gobblers interacting with each other, and kind of still going through a little bit of a spring pecking order where they've busted up out of the winter flock. And we sat there and we called a little bit and got a little more aggressive on the call, and they gobbled. And she was like, "Dad, we need to move closer." And honestly, Luke, the fact in which you ask, her being able to kind of start that process of putting a plan together or realizing that things weren't going the way that they were supposed to go, she knew that we needed to change our tactic and our strategy. And as a father, not just someone mentoring a young person, it makes you proud that they're cognitive enough and they're starting to see and understand the sport enough of what you're doing, that they know that, there's a process and there's a decision-making aspect of it to go through. So we moved up, and I finally told her, I said, "Sweetheart, if we move up closer, we have just as much, of a percentage or a chance of bumping or spooking the birds as we do harvesting one of the birds." And she said, "Dad, I think it's worth the risk." And, she's like, I'm ready. She kept saying it. She's like, "Daddy, I'm ready." And I said, "Baby girl, we're going to have to crawl a little bit, not necessarily get down the army crawl, but we're going to have to go to our knees and our hands." And she's like, "Daddy, if you'll teach me how to do it, I can learn how to do it." So I think anytime that an adult starts hunting with a kid, you're going to have to let the kid talk to you and see where their level is at and what their experience is. Because I can tell you this time last year, that's not where she was at. This time last year, we watched a gobbler come straight in at 20 yards, and she was hesitant to pull the trigger, even though she had killed turkeys before. I'd upgraded her gun and it was still a 410, but she was just a little bit more timid of it. And that I don't understand why. Kids deal with sound, they deal with recoil. And, so I look back and I reflect that just a year ago, she wouldn't have necessarily done these exact things. And then she's advanced. And then falling back on last year and looking at this year, 2 weeks after we were in Tennessee and she wouldn't pull the trigger on a gobbler, 2 weeks later in Kentucky in 2021, she did and was happy as can be. And this year she just kept telling me, she's like, "Daddy, I can do it," because I wasn't second guessing her. I just wanted her, I don't want my kid to have to deal with failure if I can prevent it. And failure teaches us so much, but we want to see success and we want to see them learn. And so that pace and what they're doing, and they're talking to us, we have to be a good listener. And we have to remember that we're their teacher and we're their hero and we're their mentor and we're all of these things. And when a hunt's coming together, we as the adult, we've got to keep our mind straight too, that we've got to make sure that we're ready to set this kid up for success. And we're also ready to brace this kid if failure happens. So we go through this process. The hunt's going through. She's made the decision that we're going to push forward. I'm glad. I eased up just a little bit. And anybody that's hunted any type of rolling terrain and hardwoods, if you can kind of just picture yourself there as a dad or a parent, being down on all four, my daughter's 8 or 10 yards behind me, and I'm just barely trying to creep up over the terrain, the topography, to see where the birds are at. And honestly, I just got lucky. I seen two tail fans fully fanned out, and they were about 75 yards away, 65, 75 yards away, and they were coming right towards us. And I got back as quick as I could to the base of a good wide tree that we had kind of picked out, and I sat there, and she was in between my legs, and I was up against the back of the tree, and I just told her, I said, Addison Grace, I said, these turkeys are going to come, and when you see them, you put some pressure on my leg or pat me or something, but don't raise your hand up or don't make any sudden movements. And just, you know, she's seen them before I did, because she buried her elbow into my thigh, and she just started shaking instantly. And, you know, at 11 years old, man, I melted into the tree as a hunter to be camouflaged, but I melted as a father too, because she's sitting there shaking, and she's like, Daddy, I see him. And she's like, Daddy, I'm going to get one. And, you know, she's holding a gun on her own. She does shoot a red dot optic, which I'm a huge favor of with working with youth. Not just my daughter, but working with youth across the United States. I feel like it's really good. I think it's an ethical way to let young people get target acquisition. And, you know, the birds, she should have honestly taken a shot at the gobbler at 25, 26 yards. That was her first good window. I was getting nervous. The bird got in on us, you know, about 10 or 11 yards. She wasn't moving too much, but she was, you know, continuing to follow through and follow the gobblers. And we can only kill one in Kentucky per day, two per season. And I just remember whispering to her, I said, Addison Grace, I'm so proud of you, even if you miss. And she goes, okay, Daddy, I'm ready to shoot. And the turkey was about 9 yards. It was two nice gobblers. I didn't know which one she was going to shoot at. They were separated enough that I was confident that if she shot, they weren't both going to drop. It was an ethical situation. And man, she ten ringed it. And, I mean, turkey just went straight down. And just, my daughter's very emotional. I'm sure you've seen it, where she had a successful deer hunt this past fall. She's very grateful. She's very thankful for the opportunity, and she knows how much work it takes as a father and as a mentor. And she's, you know, she's appreciative of that. And I've never hunted with many new hunters or kids, if you spend enough time with them, that don't realize how much time, energy, and effort you put into it. And so that's the other thing too. Not only do they talk to you or ask questions or, you know, figure out their own setup, I truly think that when people see how much time and energy and effort you put into them, I truly think that they're thankful, and they do take the time to say thank you. And there is a reflection, and she, you know, she made phone calls, and she had pictures, and she's talking about the meal and what we're going to do with the turkey. And she wants to give some feathers to Granny, and she wants to take it to the local store here in the community where, you know, she was signed up for a turkey contest, and she wants to have it weighed, and we want to go out to eat to celebrate when it's over. So Luke, honestly, she made the moves. She's getting to the age where she can tell that things aren't going exactly right. And that, you know, it's taken 3 or 4 years of just working with her. And for anybody that's out there, yourself or a listener that you know, and they have a young kid or a niece or a nephew or a grandkid, all I can tell you is of all the years, 20 plus years of being a mentor for youth and getting you truly engaged in the outdoors is do not force them into it and let them enter it and do it at their pace. Be willing to take them when they want to go. If they only want to hunt for 30 minutes or they want to hunt for 3 hours or 4 hours, that's great. You know, if they have a desire to have a certain snack or they want a pink gun or they want to wear their blue favorite sweatshirt or whatever it is that they want to do, do it and stop focusing on a successful hunt with a youth or a new hunter being a field tag. And once anybody gets past that level and you realize that hunt is for the other person, it's not for yourself, then success is going to be had.
Yeah. I think that's a hard thing to try and comprehend sometimes because you're always, you know, as a hunter and as your skills advance, you're always focused on the end result versus the experience. And sometimes I even have to pull myself aside and go, sometimes I just need to collect myself in the moment and capture in my mind the sunrise or the environment I'm in and be grateful for the experience and the beauty that I'm able to take in, not necessarily that tag that I'm fixated on or that, you know, that 150 or 160 inch buck or whatever it may be, and focus more on the moment. And this year, I think I kind of got too distracted by that because I was chasing a deer. I knew he was there. He was bigger. You and I kind of talked about it a little bit. And he kind of reeled me back in at one point when we were talking, texting back and forth. And he even said, you know, don't pass on something and ruin your, I can't remember exactly what you told me, but basically you told me to focus on the now and not so much that one deer that I kept chasing. And I kind of regret wasting most of my season doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, and going through that process, you know, like my wife, you know, she asked, you know, do you want me to go with you all in the morning and, you know, getting up to that hunt? And we'll come back on your deer hunt too. And kind of what my experience is and it's staying humble. I'll explain to the listeners kind of maybe where I got a advanced level of how to work with new hunters. But when I set my alarm at, you know, 3:15 a.m. I'm up, I fix a cup of coffee, my daughter's up at 3:30 and we're rolling. You know, I'm explaining to her like there's no foliage on the trees. There was a full moon. The birds were actually gobbling an hour and a half before official sunrise because of the full moon. And I explain to her, you know, the birds, you know, we've got one window to get there early. And I explained to her the reason that we're successful and other people aren't is because they wait too long to get in, or they don't scout their birds enough, or they push their birds too hard. And I'm always trying to let her know that what we do is different than everybody else, because what we're doing, we have decided to do it because it's consistently work for us. It's not something that we consistently see with marketing. It's not something that we consistently see in an ad. It's not something that we consistently see because it's a new product. And she's getting it. And when I see hunters, new, young, old, in the middle, towards the end, you know, I look at my father now, and, you know, he's aging and he's getting to the point to where I have a lot of good places that me and Luke can go hunt that me and my daughter can't go hunt. But I got a lot of places that me and you could go hunt that I can't necessarily take my father, because their ability to handle that terrain or their ability to train for that terrain or their diet or their nutrition or just, you know, I can't get them there, but me and you can go there. So you can't knock on people that hunt out of a blind, and you can't knock on people that hunt with a crossbow, and you can't knock on people that have this method or that method, because we're all so young and we're all so ignorant. We don't always see things through the eyes of how others have to see things. And, you know, some people don't have a knee that works real well. And some people don't have the ability to have 3 days off or a week's vacation. And some people don't have the ability to draw back a compound bow and to keep it steady. And some people don't have eyesight. And what we start looking at is what we all have is the desire to hunt and get outdoors and be good anglers and to be good hunters and to be good conservationists. And that's what we all have in common. And so when you start seeing people that no matter what their level is, if they're a public speaker or if they're in social media or if they're on some type of platform as an administrative person or a board, and no matter what their age is, it doesn't matter if it's ducks or deer or turkey or fish or whatever, we cannot overlook the fact that, you know, there was an original go when we started to hunt or we started to fish. And what was it? Maybe when we started to hunt, we just wanted to kill something. We just wanted game. You know, we just wanted a set of antlers. Maybe when we fish, we just wanted something to bite. It didn't matter if it's a catfish or a bass. And when we go out into the outdoors on private or public lands, whether we go with a gun or a bow or a rod or, you know, a spear, a net, whatever we do, we got to remember that there was something there initially that brought us to that sport or to that passion that we have. And that passion sometimes is forgotten about, or sometimes we worry about what others will think. And we got to remember that hunt is our hunt. And if it makes us happy, and if we feel like we're succeeding and accomplishing our goal, we can't necessarily worry about what everybody else is going to think. And that can be, you know, that could be a small buck. That could be shooting a jake versus a longbeard. That could be someone keeping bass where other people do catch and release. We've got to come together and realize that we're going to have differences, but we all enjoy the outdoors and we all enjoy it for different reasons. And some people go to the woods for a trophy to put on their wall. And some go for a trophy and the table fare. And some people just go just to get away from the everyday hustle and bustle and the grind of being a parent, an employee, and a son or a daughter or whatever weighs on us. You know, prior to us going live on the show, we all have our checks and balances, and sometimes those things get out of order, and we forget to reward ourselves and we forget what we're doing and why we're doing it. And, you know, I hate seeing people going afield and walking back to the truck or going back to work after their short vacation or their weekend off, whatever it is, and having a feeling of stress or disappointment because, you know, we should be coming out of the woods and off the water energized and fed. And if we're not fed, we should be coming off the water hungry because we gave it our everything. And, you know, if we're tired before we go hunt, maybe we should come back rested. And if we're rested before we go hunt, maybe we should come back tired because we, you know, extracted every ounce of energy and effort that we had to put, you know, forth ourselves to make or meet our goals. So it's a weird mental chemistry to be an angler or a sportsman hunter. You know, because we got so many different things pulling at us, but we gotta remember to enjoy that hunt.
Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, I always know when I go fishing that most likely it's gonna be a day of disappointment, but satisfaction that I got out on the water because I am not that good of an angler. And it's funny you mention that though, because there was a period where my goal, especially going out when I first started hunting public land, my goal was just to get on deer. That was my goal. Mm-hmm. And then once I started achieving that, I kept setting other goals. And then once I found a certain buck and targeted them and had encounters with them, I became obsessed. But the reality of the situation is I knew there was other places that was guaranteed nice deer that I gave up and bypassed just to get on this deer. And then never ended up seeing them, you know, a couple more times. And that was kind of tough. It was kind of a tough pill to swallow. I'm satisfied with my choices I made because I still took home deer. I filled tags, you know, an archery tag and a shotgun tag and took some does. But I focused on that one buck when I could have had opportunities on quite a few other nice bucks. But I never put myself in that situation because I targeted that one buck, that one piece of property. And I'm not dissatisfied, but I just, there's in the, that little hint of regret that I sold myself short on experiences, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a different pill to kind of swallow. You know, normally I'm not in that situation because I never put myself in that situation before, but, and that's one of the choices you have to make, you know, as a hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm seeing more and more now, you know, on as I age and, you know, YouTube or any type of media platform makes it look like every turkey comes gobbling to the call straight down the gun barrel in full strut. And, you know, every picture of deer makes a deer look really big because people just can't take a normal photo. You know, I'm a high school ag teacher by trade. I'll be honest with you. There's a little bit of photography going on out there that ain't necessarily just putting the phone up and snapping a picture. You know, there's an optical illusion going on because I know you've seen it. And I know I've seen it. You see a picture of someone's deer and you're like, man, that's a monster. And then you see it in person when they go to get it scored and you're like, oh man, that doesn't even look like the same deer. And, you know, that goes back to our kids and it goes back to youth and it goes back to new hunters. You know, you're asking, you know, what, how they make decisions in the process and going along the way, man, if they want to shoot a Jake or, you know, and I'm not a big advocate of shooting bearded hens, you know, if it's legal in your state. And I kind of, you know, I explain that. I think it's important to explain that to them at a young age. It, you know, it's just not about filling a tag. Make sure that you know what you're doing. So, you know, you talk to a kid, hey, if you shoot this hen and it's legal with a beard, you're killing a lot of turkeys. And this is maybe not a good conservation decision, and have that conversation with them. But maybe it's a kid and you feel like, hey, they want to be successful. I mean, that's their choice. That's their take. But let them make the decision. Tell them what you would do. See if they can reason through that problem solution. You know, it's taught schools. Why not teach it in the woods? And then, you know, make sure that when that new hunter or youth or whoever, you know, when they decide to pull the trigger or let the arrow fly or let the boat fly or whatever, you know, shotgun, you know, make sure that they've made a decision based on you being a good educator to them and knowing that hopefully you've had enough influence on them to whatever decision they make that they're kind of following the same practices you are. You know, unfortunately, in this world that we live in today, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that feel like they've got to grasp a turkey with their hand and show a big bloody head and put a diaphragm call in its mouth or its beak or take the shell and make it look like it's eating it. And, you know, that's how they portray the death of the turkey and their harvest. And, you know, I'm still over here in a majestic kind of way and respect way of trying to figure out how I can honor the bird and clean the bird up and stop and reflect and have some peace and honestly thank God above that I had my health and the resources to do it. That's kind of where I was getting at over, you know, the years of doing what I've done. I think the most important thing that we do is not only create a new hunter that is a conservationist. I think that we create a hunter, no matter what age they start, that is thankful for the resources and the opportunities that we have, and to make sure that they know what they're doing and why they're doing it on the aspect of being grateful to the big man upstairs and the landowners that let us hunt and the state agencies that are hopefully working in the direction to provide us resources and public lands to utilize and to put all that in perspective and have a realistic outcome at the end, because at the end of the day, even the guys and gals that get to go out and hunt every day for a living, or they lose money acting like they're doing it every day for a living, because there are a lot of fakes out there, and there are a lot of people that aren't sustainable with their income in the hunting and fishing industry. But it's just an image that they want to portray, that, you know, they want people to think that they're making a living each and every day hunting and fishing when they're really losing money. I want to raise a child, and I want to mentor children and young hunters to where when they walk out of the woods, or get off the water and get back to the truck or get back to camp, I want to be thankful, just to have the opportunity to get out and go and to remember why they went out and went, whether their tags filled or not.
Absolutely. One of the things you mentioned was shooting a bearded hen, and it kind of brings a full circle to what we were kind of talking about before the podcast. And I've shot one bearded hen, archery in the fall, but I'd have to say today, I wouldn't even make that choice. Now, back then, it was different, and I knew there was enough birds, and I wouldn't ever worry about that. And, I mean, I recall a time where there was no turkeys in the state of Illinois at all. They're just, Northern Illinois had no turkeys. And went to a meeting, went to the reintroduction meeting, and talking, you know, DNR and different departments all got together, and we're talking about, you know, the impact and how to successfully reintroduce them and all that kind of stuff. And a few years later, they were reintroduced, and after about, I think, 8 years, maybe 10 years, they actually had a hunting season. I remember a time when I would see over by my parents' house, and we're only talking 12 years ago, a flock of 50 to 60, maybe even more sometimes, in the fields. You'd see that many birds. And that's when, you know, I would take a bearded hen and not have any qualms about it. But nowadays,
right,
I do not see them numbers. And another prime example was, I remember seeing a red-tailed hawk swoop down at a bunch of poults that were following in a single file line behind their mama, and they were walking across a field. And it was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen, because that hen took off after that hawk and chased it for as far as I could see it go over the tree line. And I'd never seen a turkey fly that far before. And that was cool. And all them little fur balls, seven little fur balls dropped down right behind her and went flat on the grass. And that was just one of the neatest little experiences. But you don't see seven little fur balls anymore. And you sure as heck don't see 60 turkeys together in a field anymore.
Yeah, we, man, depending on which part of the country you're in, we could really stir the pot on this. And we will. We will stir it a little bit tonight. We got to remember that the Southeast is going to be the heart and soul of your turkey hunters. And even though you have a lot of turkey hunting in the West, and you got a lot of diehard turkey hunters up through the Northeast, you know, Pennsylvania, New York, all those states are rich in tradition and heritage of turkey hunting. There's been a lot of great individuals either in, you know, this turkey hunting community or call makers, whatever it is, public representation for the sport, that have just done so much in such a positive way. But yeah, our turkey numbers are down. And, you know, I was talking about this with people kind of quietly over the last 6 or 7 years that had the power to kind of start making some things move. And unfortunately, I'm afraid we're a little bit too late. A lot of people blamed weather. A lot of people were looking at the hatch, you know, and, oh, it's just a bad hatch, or, you know, they even put COVID into play, maybe over harvest or over utilization of our public lands. But our turkeys are going through a really tough time right now. And if the listener will just kind of put their guard down for a little bit, I will stay as humble as I can. But I want to kind of explain something. For the last 20 years of my life, I've got to hunt and fish across the United States, and I've been blessed to do that, and never at any point in time become arrogant or got a swollen head or had a Hollywood moment because of that. There are springs that I was harvesting upwards to 30 turkeys a year, keeping a full-time job, being a family man, and doing it as a weekend warrior or utilizing time to hunt with travel, work-related travel and trips. And I started seeing a major decline in our turkeys. And I started seeing a lot of things screaming at me. And I was to ask other experts to see what their opinion is. Are you seeing infertility issues? Are you seeing predation issues? And honestly, Luke, I wasn't getting a whole lot of data because for a number of years, the outstanding efforts of the National Wild Turkey Federation, state game agencies, we were abundant in turkeys. I mean, to the point to where even today, even out west in certain areas you travel, you don't have turkeys where you live. You travel all the way out here to hunt turkeys. People would look at you like you were an idiot because you would travel halfway across the United States to hunt turkeys. And they were abundant. And there's certain areas that they're still abundant in. But as a whole, we've got to remember that there's people that on their landscape, they don't have turkeys anymore on farms and lands of private and public that were just painted with a healthy turkey population. And there's some things that are going on. There's use of GMOs. There's use of pesticides. There's a more abundant population of predators, whether that's nesting predators or coyotes or bobcats, or some people are starting to even contribute, you know, other avian species to being aerial attackers. And we look at the use of TSS, and we look at the use of hub blinds and trail cameras and data. And we're more efficient at killing turkeys as human beings. And unfortunately, our winter flocks in most areas, they were declining like you were seeing. And then next thing you know, they're just poof, they're gone. They've disappeared. So if there is anybody that's listening to the podcast or listening to the show and they're like, you know, I'm not seeing that. I'm glad. Two thumbs up and congratulations. But the question is it coming your way? To the ones that are listening that are saying, yes, you know, I've seen a sharp decline, or there are farms that are just non-existent of turkeys. We got to start figuring out where we can come together and work, agree to have disagreements, to put a plan together where hopefully our landscape is not vacant of turkeys and that it doesn't get any worse than what it is. We seem to be in a lot of areas, not most, it seems to be that we've had a good hatch in the southeast, especially even in some of the northern parts of the country through the Midwest. A cicada issue maybe was to help with that. Maybe it was the weather. Maybe some of our weather right now that we've had, a different kind of April as far as dragging its feet, getting here, and it's been cooler and rainy and cloudy and maybe that's going to save some turkeys for us, but we've got issues. We're going to have to work through some stuff, in order to figure out, is it mostly disease? Is it viral? What is there something that's impacting a bird that's creating infertility issues? Is there something that's going on more with the male species or the female species? Do we have success where we have more people utilizing public lands than ever before? And do we have success where we have people utilizing more private land than ever before? I mean, are we to the point where we've had so much success in recruiting new hunters that we are over harvesting our flock? Did we over harvest, our turkeys during COVID on top of the aspect that they were having some production issues just with Mother Nature, or maybe something that has come in is play or a factor that we haven't necessarily pinpointed yet or got an official science release data script to have a biologist or a state agency to publicize? I mean, is there something going on in the agriculture world that that, you know, maybe a chemical or a chemical company knows something and they're covering something up, or is it something that we just haven't found yet? And when we look at all of this, we've just got to remember as we move through this spring turkey season, going back to being blessed and fortunate and remembering why we're out there, you know, when season's over this year, besides just running the boar snake through the gun or, you know, switching back to our deer broadheads or our deer setups on our archery equipment, it may be time to pick up the phone and call your state turkey biologist, or it may be time to join a club or an organization, or just see what you can do as an individual to help go out there and help make some habitat better. It may be time to start looking at ways and methods and which we do have to make some decision-making process and reach out to our commissioners and maybe support a shorter hunting season or not using decoys or changing season dates. I mean, no hunter wants to see less days afield. No hunter wants to see a reduction of a bag limit. No hunter wants to see a species that they love and care about, that's their lifestyle and their passion. No one wants to see that decline, but it is. And there is no one person right now, or there is no single answer on how we're going to get through this. And we're going to have to agree to disagree, and we're going to have to make the decision that what one state finds, another state may be able to utilize, and we're going to have to get through the politics and dollars and all of the ribbon and tape cutting stuff to make sure that our turkeys are doing well. But Luke, in Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, lots of other states, I mean, it's just not the turkey. I mean, it's there's Asian carp. You know, we're battling how we handle CWD in one state to the next state. And I hope, I mean, I truly do hope that people of our age group, and as the younger age group, I hope that they stay more involved with their voice and their actions and their energy and their efforts into helping on public and private lands after season. You know, folks don't need to just get fired up for turkey season a week or a month before and, you know, blow their diaphragm calls or get their vest out and organize it and pattern their shotgun. Just like bow hunters don't need to just get all jacked up when it's time to go hang some trail cameras and get those velvet pictures. And, you know, we need to be putting just as much time, energy, and effort into our resources 365 days a year as we are during the month of November if we're a whitetail hunter. And if we're a turkey hunter, we need to be putting just as much heart and passion into saving our bird and promoting what we can for the well-being of the wild turkey and the other 10 months out of the year other than April and May. And some of our guys and gals listening, you know, they're getting started in March down in Florida and Mississippi. And we've got to all move in this shift energy and effort to where maybe we're going to have to start putting less of our dollars into gear and putting more of our dollars into conservation and instead of putting so much time, energy, and effort into our scouting, maybe we're going to have to start putting a little bit more time, energy, and effort in habitat restoration and seeing where we can volunteer or seeing where we can aid our wildlife. Because, you know, I'm not happy that on a rainy day in the spring that I can drive 150 miles through back roads or 200 miles on the interstates and not see a turkey in a single field. And I know, just like you know, there's farmers and landowners that blame turkeys for ticks, and they blame turkeys for walking down the road and picking out every kernel of corn that's been planted or every seed that's been set in the field. But once again, before the show, you know, we're not tilling ground anymore, and we're creating deserts with pesticides, and we have a lot of properties that we're not cutting timber on for this reason or that reason, and we're not having succession, and we have urban sprawl, and we have million-dollar houses in areas where Mother Nature and God used to have lightning and natural, you know, fire that would help promote and regenerate growth, and now insurance companies and different agencies, you know, they stop fire. You know, we don't let fire, even when it occurs naturally, when God and Mother Nature make it occur, we stop it as man. And I'm not sure that's really what we're supposed to do. We can do it. We have the capability of doing it, but I'm not sure that's what's best for our wildlife. And I think Mother Nature's always going to win. And I think we can learn from her, and I think we can aid her and help her. But I never think we'll ever be able to control her. And I'll go to my grave thinking that. I think Mother Nature sometimes tries to give us a wake-up call, whether that's driving those roads and not seeing the turkeys out, whether that's seeing too many deer in an urban area, whether that's driving your boat up and down the river and seeing just a tremendous amount of, you know, invasive species, whether it's carp. Or driving down to the beach and seeing all the kudzu as you go through Georgia and Alabama. There's so many examples of things out there that are out of control that got away from us. And I'm hoping, and I am praying every single day. And I mean that our turkey situation gets better. And I'm praying that people will come back at some level or plateau of a agreement to work for the wild turkey. I'm not sure if that will be through Turkeys for Tomorrow or the NWTF or, you know, the BHA or the local sportsman's club, or I'm not sure how we're going to get back to grassroots and volunteering and doing for wildlife. But I will say that no matter if it's turkey or quail or, you know, non-game species, pollinators, I think that all of us kind of get tied up in life and get busy, and sometimes we take more than we give back. And that's been one of my big efforts this spring with our efforts in working with youth and conservation projects and mentor hunts, is to give back more than you take. And that's kind of where we're at right now as hunters and anglers, is we need to remember that very simple statement, and that is give back more than you take, because if not, it's not sustainable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that goes with anything and everything that we like to do outdoors, not even just hunting, but foraging. You know, if you're taking something, you're utilizing the resource, try and give back. Try and think of a way to help it propagate, whether that's through some type of management or getting involved and planting something somewhere else, hopefully legally, of course. Sometimes maybe guerrilla methods might be the right way in order to preserve something that you know is right, as long as you actually know the science behind it and the biology of certain things. But being able to not only ensure that you get to enjoy that resource and use it, but ensuring that the next generation and securing something for that next generation, I think that's crucial, that as we're users, we're also givers. As we take those resources, we make sure that the next generation is able to utilize them too. And that's sometimes, like you said, it's a hard pill to swallow to realize that you're just a consumer, but you need to be something that helps give back to it too. So I think that's a good note to wrap it up on. Kind of hits nail on the head and drives it home for everybody that, you know, we can't always just take, but sometimes you need to give back. So, Scott, before we kind of go and wrap everything up here, if somebody wants to get a hold of you or try and maybe get involved in some of the stuff you do as far as conservation or mentorship or anything like that, especially in the state of Kentucky, or maybe they just want some help to get something set up in their home state, where can they get a hold of you?
Well, whenever you post this, I guess just tag me on social media, and they can always reach out to me through some type of message there. If they want to reach out directly to you, feel free to give them my cell phone number or email or whatever it is. But main thing is anymore. I guess we love it or hate it. We live through the world of social media. So with all the security aspects of it out there, if they will just do a little Google search or maybe reach out to you or find me on the Facebook or Instagram, I'll be more than happy to help anybody. And to close out on one thing, I know that we have both men and women who enjoy the outdoors, and we have young and old who enjoy the outdoors, but there's a lot of us out there, and we still are pretty predominant in the male species being in the outdoors or being the stereotypical user of the outdoors. We need to let our guard down and admit that we just don't know some things, but we're willing to help. And, reach out to your biologist, reach out to your game wardens, reach out to your, local agency officials and administration team, hunter ed coordinators, and just tell them, say, I want to help. That's all I want to do. And sometimes when a man grows a beard and gains some weight and gains some height, sometimes it's hard to stand in front of somebody else and say, I don't know how to do something. Or I want to help, but I don't know how. And please drop that guard and realize that, your time, energy, and efforts can be utilized somewhere. Your resources can be utilized somewhere. Your equipment, your company, your finances, something can be utilized that each and every one of us have out there, no matter what our age, no matter what our sex, no matter what our religious belief. I mean, we all have something to offer, each and every one of us, consumptive users and non-consumptive users, husbands, spouses, sons, daughters, grandchildren, grandparents. We all have something that we can give back to Mother Nature, and she gives so much to us. So it's a great thing to return the energy and efforts onto.
Absolutely. Scott, I appreciate it. And thank you so much. As always, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, sir. I've enjoyed it.
Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're listening to. Also, if you could leave a review, that would help us out. And you could check us out on Instagram or at publiclychallenged.com. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show.